Tech Talk with Lee Stark.
Okay, good morning, Lee. We spoke yesterday about that disruption across the world, and we have our regular segment each and every Sunday morning. So Lee has joined us again. Hi, mate.
Good morning, mate. How you going?
Not too bad. A couple of listener questions. Emma says, I am continually having dropouts on my internet and my provider is refusing to look into the matter, blaming my low speed on too many devices attached. Emma says, I pay for 50 megabits per second and regularly receive closer to 15 megabits per second. I have two smart lights usually in standby, one Echo Dot, one smartphone, and a PC, which is normally turned off. Is this too many devices, Lee?
No. However, devices, it's usually not a device problem. It can be a network problem, absolutely. NBN speeds aren't always guaranteed. Depending on the times you use them, there are peak speeds. So also contact the telco or the ISP and ask them what your peak speeds at certain times should be. That's you pay for up to 50 megabits in that instance. You don't pay for 50 megabits as a persistent connection. So it's worth being aware that if you pay for 100 megabits, your connection will range between 50 and 94, usually, sometimes 98. If you pay for 50, your connection is probably going to range between 15 and 42, believe it or not. So you're paying for a connection maximum, not a connection requirement. However, it could be the connection. It's actually very common. If you want to do some testing, there's a great app for every phone and tablet available called Speed Test. We actually use it in all of our phone reviews to make sure the phones actually perform at the speeds being suggested. And Speed Test runs a test and basically determines the maximum speed you're able to get on a connection. Works on 4G, 5G, works on internet, works on any connection that you can get to the internet. But it also, it might not be the ISP, it could actually be the router. And the reason we say this, and this kind of popped up a few years ago when everyone was working from home and there were more devices connected, something tech reviewers have known for a long time is that the devices that you get for your internet connection from your telco, your ISP, are often fairly low grade. They communicate at a certain wireless speed. They communicate for a certain amount of devices. The amount of devices you have in your home is small in number. So it should be okay, but for families that or homes that have more than 20 devices or even around 20 devices, the router, the wireless router that you get from your ISP might actually be not as high grade as it could be, so you might not be getting the highest speeds possible. For me, it sounds a lot like you're getting different speeds at different times of the day. 15 megabits is not a lot, but what I'd be doing is I'd be grabbing that Speed Test app and testing it on your phone or your computer. You can actually go to Speed Test. I think it's speedtest.com, actually. It does the same thing on your browser. You can test it a few times in the day and then report back to your ISP and say, this is what I'm getting at these certain times. What should I be getting, and is it a problem with my router or a problem with the connection?
Lee, I have an Optus modem or router, which was supplied when I signed up with them. Mm-hmm. And they've sent me a new one probably, I don't know, maybe 16 months ago, 12, 16 months ago. If I want to go and buy a better router, A, is it possible to do that? B, how does one set it up? And C, what sort of costs are you looking at? And is it really worth it?
It's worth it if you have a lot of devices. It's worth it if you need faster speed. So if you have probably over 15 devices, dependent on, and you have kids, perfect example is video games or high-speed, like 4K movies, then, yeah, it can get worth it. It's really a question of how much you see yourself needing to spend. And another factor is how big your home is. So a perfect example of things like, we've mentioned this before, but mesh wireless devices, which allow you to create what is effectively a Venn diagram of wireless activity around your home. It doesn't just boost the range, it boosts the performance overall, and they can go anywhere between 200 square meters to 600 to 700 square meters, depending on the model that you get. In terms of easy to do, yeah, it's quite easy. The remarkable thing about what the NBN gave us, aside for, you know, supposed to be decent internet across the country, is that it's fairly easy to do it. We've all got an NBN Connect box in our houses these days, or in apartments or in flats and units as a slightly different setup. But we all have a standard cable connection that effectively goes into the router. It goes into the basically a port on the back of a router. Simply put, you should just be able to plug it in, and then when you go to set up your new router, you type in any login details if you even need to. Not everyone needs to do that. Some devices will actually pick up on the connection automatically. The cost is where things get interesting, because they range anywhere between $300 usually to a maximum of $4,000. I will say that the $3,000 and $4,000 units, they've actually suggested to me that I review them over the past couple of weeks, and I keep coming back to, even as good as they are, I have a hard time arguing for a legitimate value proposition for anyone spending that sort of money on that technology, because it typically comes down in price very quickly. So there's a $4,000 mesh router at the moment called the Orbi, I think it's a 970, and it uses the latest Wi-Fi 7 technology. But to be honest, I'll be surprised if that device is $2,000 next year. It'll drop in price quite quickly as more people have these things. Spending $3,000 to $4,000 on Wi-Fi gear is pretty much living in cutting edge technology or cutting edge tech territory, where you don't mind spending because you've got the money to spend. Most people should generally spend at most $1,000. And to be honest, I would tell people typically, if you're going to buy a wireless router, probably look around the $500 to $600 mark mostly. Wi-Fi 6E is the current whiz-bang technology that most people should go for. It's very similar to Wi-Fi 7. It's more widely supported than Wi-Fi 7. It's just ever so slightly not as fast as Wi-Fi 7. But ultimately, you can wait a bit. The difference between Wi-Fi 6 and Wi-Fi 6E, by the way, is that with Wi-Fi 6, you get two connections. You get 2.4 and 5 gigahertz. 6E and 7 both add an extra 6 gigahertz layer. This sounds like jargon. The easy way of explaining it is you get even faster speeds for newer devices. So high-speed TVs, 4K downloads, new computers, new phones, things like that. What I tell people is that put the devices like smart lights and kids' phones and other kids' tablets on the lower performing one, the 2.4 gigahertz ones, and put your more important devices on the 5 and 6 gigahertz bands, because they're the ones that deliver speed more aggressively.
Tom says, Telstra are putting up my mobile phone price. Should I look for a better deal with another provider, or are they all much the same?
They're not much the same, actually. You should always look around. I will always tell people, compare your options. The reality is Telstra puts up their prices in accordance, or they claim in accordance with CPI every year. I don't know whether that's true or not, but it's certainly a great way of making money. You should always look around. The thing about Telstra is that, with the exception of 5G's ultimate maximum speeds, you can actually get 5G and 4G speeds on Telstra's wholesale network, which basically means that Telstra supplied to smaller operators, Mate Mobile, Woolies Mobile, Aldi, a few others, all around Belong, Boost. Many of them use Telstra, and as there are other providers that use Optus and Vodafone. You should look around, absolutely. There are much less expensive options. I use Telstra through Mate Mobile, and it ends up costing something like $50 a month for an amount of bandwidth that I don't even use. I think it's 150 gig a month, but there are better options even than what I'm getting. If you don't need 5G, you can also save a lot of money.
Okay, let's talk about some of the topics. Samsung, the first and the last major phone announcements for the year has happened. Samsung is ready with two new foldable phones and two new wearables. Now, it seems as though for Samsung, foldable phones is the way they're going.
Yeah, I mean, they've certainly experimented longer than most people. I've got one of the new ones here. It's almost $3,000, the Z Fold 6. That's the new one, which is a lot of money for a phone, admittedly. I mean, it's effectively a phone that unfolds into a tablet. So it's a six-inch-oddish phone that unfolds into about a 7.4-inch tablet, and it looks better than ever. It doesn't come with a stylus, which I find remarkable given it supports it, but it's high-end. It's made for people that roughly, they know they want a tablet and they know they want a phone, but they want a device that does both, and this certainly covers that. It's got a unique feature this year. It supports the ability to translate language in real time, because there are two screens. There's a screen on the outside, small one, and a screen on the inside. And what it can do is it can actually listen to how you speak, and it can take that information and translate it into a different language while you're traveling on a screen on the outside. So you could actually have a conversation with somebody in a foreign language simply by using the screens on your phone. phone, which is clever. The Z Flip 6 is also interesting. It's a foldable clamshell phone. There's a few of these popping out. I just finished writing a review of its competitor. And basically, it's a big phone made to be small. So if you picture a large iPhone, like an iPhone 15 Pro Max, it's something like that. But instead, you fold it in the middle like an old flip phone, and effectively it becomes a compact phone.
It does, but it's a very thick phone then, isn't it?
Yeah, the thickness of these things is close to around 12 to 15 mil, so they're chunky in your pocket, to be honest, but you don't have to actually keep them folded in your pocket. You can actually keep them unfolded, and they bend slightly because of the hinge in the middle. So you have two ways of using them. They are chunky, that's true, when they're folded, but I love the fact that they're suitably compact, because it means phones have been forever getting so large that my pants don't know how to deal with them. The pockets are just not quite sizable enough to compensate. I like this approach that we're going in, but there are trade-offs. You only get two cameras on these things. The battery life typically maxes out at a day. So the trade-offs are basically you get slightly less features in exchange for the convenience of something that is smaller in the hand.
Still, $3,000. Boy, is that a stiff price for a phone.
Oh my gosh, don't get me started. The value argument on foldables is very difficult to actually comprehend at most times. And, I mean, you can spend that much on an iPhone, to be honest. So it's not as if Samsung's in grey territory here, but it is a lot of money. And I'm not sure the technology necessitates it, to be honest.
What about the wearables? We're seeing more and more of these wearables, aren't we? Tell us what, for those that don't know, the obvious is an Apple Watch or a Samsung smartwatch or something like that, but there are other wearables, aren't there?
Yeah, wearable just means any piece of technology you can wear. Weirdly, earphones are actually considered a type of wearable. They've coined a new term for those called hearables, which is incredibly frustrating since it's a pair of earphones. A wearable is basically any computer that you can wear. It's often a smartwatch, but it's sometimes an activity band. It could be a blood pressure monitor. I've certainly reviewed wearable blood pressure monitors before. Many of them have screens. Not all of them do. There's actually a device called the Whoop that tracks high-intense fitness for athletes that doesn't come with a screen. There's obviously the Galaxy Ring coming up, which is a ring that you wear that does all the same sort of things as a health tracker, but it doesn't have a screen. You just track it on your finger. Samsung's two new wearables this year are the Galaxy Watch 7, which is a circular watch made for Android people. It doesn't work on iPhone like Apple Watch stuff. Apple Watch Gear only works on the iPhone, and Android Gear typically only works on Android, whereas Fitbit and other brands kind of sit on both camps. They don't really care. The Galaxy Watch only works on Android. It's designed for Samsung phones, but it will work on any Android phone. And there's also the Galaxy Watch Ultra. And this year, it looks exactly like an Apple Watch Ultra. I mean, it's really hard to be... To be fair to Samsung on this one, because it looks like an absolute rip-off or a copy of it. I've got one here. I haven't started reviewing it yet. The band looks like an Apple Watch Ultra. The device itself is a circular screen on a squarish body, so it does look a lot like an Apple Watch. But it's for people on the Android camp who are jealous, because they can't make an Apple Watch Ultra to work on Android. So a lot of the Android people are saying, where's my titanium durable watch that lasts several days of battery life? And this is Samsung's alternative.
Okay. Amazon are putting out, well, I mean, I'm of the vintage of having an alarm clock to wake me up each and every morning. It seems as though the ringing of the classic alarm clock may well be a thing of the past, but there could be a new approach for an alarm clock with an Echo Spot.
Yeah, the Echo Spot, it actually popped up about 6 years ago, but they retired it really quickly. It's a circular speaker that kind of sits up on your bed or your desk side, and it effectively has a small screen and a small speaker kind of sitting on top of each other. And the idea is, a lot of smart displays have tried this, to put a little screen and speaker next to your bed so you can wake up next to it. Lenovo and Google have both tried this in the past. Amazon's approach is actually the most recent version, which is a circular speaker and screen that you can use for music, you could use to listen to this great show. I'm not sure if you've heard of it. It's called Bread Multitudes. Great show in the morning. You can listen to that on that. And it's a little bit sucking up for me in the morning. It's always handy. But admittedly, it doesn't have a camera. A lot of Amazon speakers do, because you can talk through them. This doesn't. This is basically a passive speaker that you could use, but also check out the weather, check out the news album, and things like that. It's about $150, which I think is a little bit more than it probably should be, but it's worth pointing out, Amazon speakers typically go down in price all the time. It's part and parcel of how Amazon likes to upsell you on things on its website. So if you are interested in something like this, pay attention to its website, because sales are all the time.
Optus is going to keep the 3G network going in some places after the shutdown. The official shutdown for Telstra, I think, is the end of August, isn't it?
Yeah, and technically it's the end of August for Optus, but they word it differently. They say it's going to be switched off at the beginning of September, which is technically the end of August. They just don't word it the same way. Yeah, it's weird. Telstra has been adamant that they will have 4G parity for its 3G network by the end of August. And extending its date, while good for users, also means that they've been able to buy themselves a little time. Optus has had a slightly different approach. It's pretty clear they're probably not going to get their 4G network up to 3G parity, and in fairness, everyone's had about 12 or 13 years to get this right, so it's going to take some time. So Optus has said its 3G network will actually still be on in places if they can't get it up to parity. They've also said in the past few days that they're also going to try and get 20,000 free mobile phones out to Optus subscribers who are facing financial hardship or might be struggling to actually get their to make the switch across. You won't get an iPhone, but the telco will work with you to try and get something out to you. But it's also a sign to anyone else that this is pretty much the last month of this whole process. If you haven't switched now, you need to really think about it, because come August 31st, that's your last day of mostly of having an actual 3G network working for you.
How long have we had the 3G network in operation in this country?
I think it's about 2005. We had the 4G network switch on for use around 2012. That puts it into perspective. So we've had 4G ready technically as a replacement for over a decade. And the 5G network started switching on in 2018. So we'll have 4G and 5G for quite some time. The decommission of the 3G network, a lot of people don't understand it. It affects more than just phones. It affects FPOS systems. It affects cameras on rural activities and farms and things like that. It reaches quite wide. But the reason it's being shut down is they can use that extra, those bands for other things. And the current expectation is they'll use it for future mobile technologies like 6G, which will require slightly different speeds in general.
All right, mate. Thank you so much. We appreciate our chats with you each and every week. This week, twice. Thanks, mate, as always, for answering our questions. You have a good week, and we'll catch up with you next Sunday.
No worries. Happy to help. Have a great week.
Thank you, Lee. See you, mate. Bye-bye. That is Lee Stark, and he's got himself a website, and it is Lee, L-E-I-G-H. Lee, that's his email address, Lee at pickr.com.au. I give you his email address because if you have any questions and you would like Lee to answer them, send an email to him. Tell him you listen to him every Sunday morning on the Brent Bultitude Weekend Breakfast Show, and he will answer the question for you. His website, pickr.com.au.